For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave.
Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here in the cave with Timothy O'Donnell and producer Jim Ganley. We are, Tim, I wake up in the morning and one of the first things I do, probably like everybody else, is I grab that little cell phone and grab a cup of coffee.
Oh, yeah.
I sit down and I go through my daily news on Twitter. And I didn't think of this as anything weird until my parents were visiting once. And they and they remarked about just how, it used to be, you didn't grab a phone. You would grab an actual, newspaper.
Exactly, the morning edition.
But the morning edition has been transplanted by Twitter, Facebook, any amount of social media. I think some people, they just totally forgo a morning news ritual and, just get sucked into email and
I can't think of I can't think of the last time I actually spotted a paper boy.
Right.
As a former paper boy or paper girl, not that I was a paper girl, but it could be either gender delivering papers. That's my point. But as a paper boy, that was one of the that was one of the earliest. To join the workforce. That was one of the sort of entry points, right? Was to get a paper route, and
right.
I had a paper route because it I wanted to earn a little money more than my allowance, and then also I played sports, and the paper route was, I literally got up at 4:30 in the morning when they dropped off the stack of newspapers each day, and then I had to roll them up and put them in my little sidecar, my little bag.
Oh yeah,
bag.
And used to have the one person that wanted it between the screen door and the other one.
Oh yeah,
somebody that wanted it over by the milk box back
exactly.
then.
Exactly,
that sort of thing. Today they just put them in a bag and throw them on the end of the driveway.
Correct, and they used to. I remember too. So you deliver, then you'd have to go back around. I remember every house that you were delivering to had a card and with their information on it, and then what kind of subscription they had, whether they had daily or Sunday only. And then you'd go knock on the door. So Sunday afternoons, I would go around, or sometimes Saturday afternoons, I'd go around and knock on doors, ring bells, and try to collect. And then some people were home, sometimes they weren't, blah, blah, blah. And then, but I got to tell you, though, the daily news has, with a lot of things, right, the digital content has ever increasingly displaced that. And so now I'm with you. I mean, I get my cell phone is really a smartphone, and therefore that's where I'm getting tons and tons of information.
Right. And, it used to be then after you would read the newspaper, you could go out to the store or to the barber shop or wherever. And you could discuss. You'd have that in common that everybody had read the same news stories. Everybody had that kind of commonality, and you could gripe about it. You could complain about what the newspaper was covering or not. But everybody had that same basis. And now I'm shocked the number of times where I've read something that to me seems like huge news, and 90% of the people I talk to haven't heard of it, or vice versa. There's something everybody else has talked about, and I'm like, I haven't seen that.
Yeah, the huge diversity of news sources, and then, which also brings up the issue of, then the quality and credibility of some of those sources too. I'll read some of the, there's some I consider, very solid, but then I also, I find it, kind of titillating to go to some of the sketchier ones just to kind of see what kind of, I don't want to say crazy, but off the wall, the National Enquirer used to fill that all the time.
They're getting, the World News that you'd see.
Oh, yeah. They found Sasquatch everywhere.
Exactly.
Remember that? Like every other week there was Sasquatch or a UFO or both.
And I learned a lot about history just growing up, because I remember early on having to ask my parents, now who is Elvis?
Right. Yeah. That's right. There used to be Elvis sightings all the time.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. He wasn't really dead. Yeah, yeah, that all faded.
There used to be radio stations that would play a game in the afternoon, and they would give you like four headlines, three of which were real in one of the tabloid papers, and one was totally made up and bizarre that the staff just made up before. You couldn't tell. You couldn't tell.
Oh, that's great.
But, you know, in part of this, though, is increasingly we're spending more and more time online. And so just
enormous amounts of time.
I think just the amount of time that we're spending is starting to, it's starting to change us. It's starting to change us as a people. It's starting to change us, I think, individually, psychologically. So the whole digital world that we live in, and a lot of our entertainment now is digitized. I mean, the amount of gaming now that goes on.
Ooh, we need to talk about that. Yes.
Right. And, you know, it used to be growing up, I'm old enough that, you know, you would leave at 8 a.m. on a Saturday. And the goal was you weren't supposed to come back home until 8 o'clock at night when the streetlights came on.
Correct.
And, you know,
By today's standards, it's parents would just never, allow that.
Not only would they never allow that, but they'd be prosecuted.
Oh, yeah, for neglect.
For neglect, exactly. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, my parents had no, I mean, yeah, so this is, you know, this is going back to the 70s, really. My parents had no idea where we were. I mean, I was, other than who I was with, I mean, I was always with either one of my brothers or one of my two best friends, but we would literally disappear because we were kind of on the edge of the subdivision. So there was still some farmland around there and some woods, and so we'd go, you know, with our, you know, imaginations in hand, and whoop, off we go into the woods and goof around, and but parents had no idea where we were. They had no way to contact us, and we would show up when it started getting, and we'd be covered in dirt and mud, and more than once had to strip down, you know, down to the tighty whities right there in the garage because mom was not going to let us in covered in mud like that, not in her house.
And I bet you if you sat down with your parents, they knew. I mean, they knew where you were. They knew what you were doing.
Back then, it was as long as they had a kind of a general idea of who you were with and kind of where, what direction you were headed in, they knew it was safe. They didn't have concerns, and we didn't have the 24-hour news cycle like we do now. And so, oddly enough, I was reading an article recently that shows part of what we're going to talk about today. I think Mark is a branch of philosophy called aesthetics. And in taking a look at things like video games and just social media and how that stuff is like, as you mentioned, you know, how we're acting and reacting to it. But I remember going back as a kid, you know, our parents would drop us off, say, for example, at the movie theater. And we would be there and watch a couple of different movies. And then we would make sure we had change, quarters, so we could use the payphone to call one of our parents to come pick us up when we were done.
Right.
And all they knew was going to be somewhere between, if we stayed for one movie, it'd be about, you know, two and a half hours. Two movies would be about 5 hours. And then we'd call home, and then hopefully someone would pick up, and it was all landlines. But in between, you know, it was safe. And so today, though, we're in this, what I was going to mention about this news article I read is that over the last 20 years or so, violent crime in the United States has fallen about 50%.
Yeah, it's plummeted. People don't quite realize that because of the 24-hour news cycle.
But yep, yeah, and the news cycle leads with 90% of the news coverage is over something tragic. And so since it's an unrelenting cycle of bad news, it sort of misrepresents or comes across, we're hearing it or feeling as if it's nothing but bad news out there when, in fact, there's a lot of good news in terms of at least crime statistics.
Right, yeah. You know, and we could do a whole show on how the delivery of the news and what news content is and really the whole idea and concept of news. You know, what exactly is news when you say
reporting and journalism.
Exactly. We could
ethical standards.
Right. But, you know, I think the other thing that's happened, though, is we're no longer sending the kids out into the woods, but we're sending them out into kind of a digital woods.
Yeah.
And you know, just like mom and dad had no idea where you were, you know, when you headed out the door at 8 o'clock physically, now parents are having a harder and harder time keeping track of where their kids are online, where their kids are in the virtual universe. And so that's creating some challenges and difficulties and new dangers for kids that certainly didn't exist 20 years ago.
Yeah, and increasingly we're seeing more and more good science being done around it. By that I mean psychology, neuroscience, and how, again, at face value, it would seem like, you know, if I have a device like a smartphone or a tablet or a PC or a laptop, it would seem like those are, because they're inanimate, they're neutral. And what we're finding is increasingly the devices are not neutral. They're actually doing things to us as we're using them, right? They're impacting how our brains work and are wired. And they're forming us, just like other things we interact with, they're forming us into certain kinds of people through our habits.
Right. And that's fascinating in itself, to think that the human psyche is such that it's malleable by the environment around it. You know, we think of personhood, and we think of being an individual as something that's very self-contained. You really can't affect who I am. And I really can't affect who you are. And as we get into the digital age, we're seeing how untrue that really is.
Yeah.
That who we are is very plastic, very changeable, not only by the people around us, but by the objects around us.
Right. Here's a dark, tragic example where I've done a fair amount of research, and that is the ill effects of pornography. The use of pornography. Again, it's a digital kind of content, right? But it literally creates rewiring in one's brain, not completely dissimilar to the way very powerful drugs like heroin rewire the brain. And there's also, I read an article recently in Public Discourse, and there's emerging neuroscience that also shows this steady diet of pornography has both, this sort of increasing, it creates an increasing desire for intensity. So there's a kind of a deepening and worsening of it. You're no longer satisfied with, casual or type pornography. You need to go darker and deeper over time, and you're drawn in further and further. But also, there's a point at which in your brain, the neuroscience is beginning to point to, it can actually reside next to and trigger violence. And this is why people who have been, find themselves trapped in pornography eventually gravitate towards more and more violent type of pornography as well. So we all know pornography is a horrible evil. But I will say, as Catholics, we certainly should know that. But I will say, though, as I've met and interacted with young adults that are not Catholic or not brought up in the faith, there's a wide acceptance to pornography in its mildest forms.
Yeah, and you know that's not
As an aid to their intimate romantic lives.
Right, and that,
which
that's
is shocking to me still.
Shocking, but not surprising. I mean, it's been predicted. So Paul VI wrote about that in Humanae Vitae. It's been kind of out there for a little while.
Yeah, shocking is the wrong word. It's jarring.
Yeah,
I guess
jarring. Yes. Jarring. I'll agree. Well, we're coming up on a break, so we're gonna have to take a quick break. And when we come back, let's dive in a little bit more about technology and how that affects who we are as people.
It's not too early to sign up for our Catholic Radio annual dinner. This year's dinner will be on Tuesday, October 2nd at the Northside Knights of Columbus Hall near 71st and Keystone. Archbishop Charles Thompson will be our guest speaker. There'll be a silent auction, a live auction, some great food, and a chance to meet the staff and board members of Catholic Radio Indy. You can sign up right now at catholicradioindy.org or by giving us a call at 317-870-8400.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave, where we are being a bit curmudgeonly today. We're acting
good
like
thing we don't have to spell that.
We're acting like the old men that we are, reminiscing about the good old days of our childhood and what things were like. But more to the point, we're talking about some of the challenges and changes that have come about through technology, specifically entertainment technology. You know, how we entertain ourselves now has to a certain extent changed who we are. It's not only changed who we are as a people, but it's changed who we are as individuals. I mean, there's a direct impact. Not all of it's bad, though. And I think that was kind of we went pretty dark in that last segment. And so,
yeah.
You know, I think when you step back and you look at it, not all of the change that's come about from social media, from gaming, from this new entertainment that's available because of the technology, not all of it's bad.
Oh, no, not at all. There's a tremendous amount of benefits. I mean, I think, you know, a couple of quick ones off the top of my head that I find with, again, kind of, we're focusing kind of really from a technology standpoint, kind of our personal devices. So smartphones, laptops, you know, iPads, that kind of stuff. Well, one huge advantage I see is, I think it makes me a lot more productive and efficient throughout the day because I can, by using apps, I can quickly find out information in a way that I wasn't able to before. So
right.
Just
yeah.
little things like I can pay a bill very quickly. I can check my account balances. I might check a new quick news headline. And that's a lot faster because it's in the palm of my hand. Then, like, as we were talking about the days of the old, you know, hard copy newspaper, where if I wanted to look something up, I have to go find it or find the section that it was in and ramble around. So, I think the other, you know, a thing like a Wikipedia, I think is a tremendous advantage to put a lot of, again, Wikipedia, again, I don't let students use that as like a bibliography resource, but it is a great source for beginning information and to have just something like a Wikipedia at your fingertips
exactly.
is
just,
a huge advantage.
Yeah, and a general information. Because the way Wikipedia yeah. works, it's self-correcting. So
yeah.
you can usually be pretty confident that what you see on Wikipedia
yeah,
is going to be fairly accurate because there's a community there that's looking at it from a lot of different perspectives. And if there's something that's too biased or too out there or wrong, other people will catch it pretty quickly.
Yeah. I think the other huge advantage of smartphones, which is portable personal telephones anyway, is that this just moving into the cellular age, the wireless age, where each person, we now each have, when I was a kid, the closest we had were walkie-talkies. And, right?
Exactly,
and there's
yeah.
only two of them, and they didn't have much distance either. You could, man, you know, if you had a really good pair, you might get 30 yards out of them.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah,
right, exactly.
Well, I remember, I remember car trips as a kid, and you know, when you did have a walkie-talkie, or even better yet, you were traveling with a friend that had a CB radio.
Oh, we
you
did know, have a CB.
You could,
My
you
dad
You could
had
communicate
one.
Between cars, and that was
yeah.
like this huge thing. And now.
Yeah.
When you step back and you think about it, you can text, you know, you can caravan with somebody and you can be in constant communication through text, through the cell
oh,
phone,
yeah.
through, you know, the technology, hey, we kind of take it for granted that you can just, you know, if you've got a question, if you need to stop, if you need to pull over, you don't need to have some sort of ornate system of signals.
Hand signals.
Yes.
Yeah. Roll down the window.
Yeah. I'll flash my lights three times and that means I need to pull over.
Right.
You
yeah.
don't have to, you know, you can just pick up your cell phone and call. You know, moving back to the entertainment side, though, too, you know,
that's where I think it's more of a mixed bag.
Well, it's a mixed bag, but I do see some advantages as the technology has developed. So, you know, back when we were kids, the technology was very limited. I think last show we were laughing about Pong when
oh,
Pong
yes.
first came out
Atari.
As a video game.
Yeah.
And but the thing about Pong and Atari was you could play with one other person at most. More often than not, you're playing by yourself. So,
yeah,
you know,
there's a lot of that.
And as video gaming has developed, it's turned into a much more social endeavor to where you're on a headset, you're talking to not only one or two other people, but you're talking to a community of people. There's a bad side to that possibly, but it's bringing people together from across the country
and across the world even
right yeah. with a shared interest, which, you know, when you look at Aristotle and, you know, the four levels of friendship, one of the most basic forms of friendship is built around a common interest. And so, you know, you've got this community that's able to develop, you know, maybe not the deepest friendships, but friendships nonetheless over a common interest that just wasn't around prior to these games.
Yeah, I think that was, as a kid, one of the things that would be most enjoyable, but also could be most frustrating, would be most enjoyable is when you found someone who was a friend or a family member, and you did have that shared interest. Hey, do you want to play checkers? Do you want to play chess together? Something like that. But then the other time would be maybe you get interested in a game. I played a lot of games growing up. I had wide interest in games. And I couldn't always find someone to play the game with, though, because not everyone wanted to play all these different games that I had. And so that can be kind of frustrating. So you're right, this ability to leverage the internet to connect across, to create this. I mean, talk about a wide open invitation. Anyone who's interested in playing these particular games, that's incredibly powerful to create that kind of forum.
Yeah, I've noticed over the years teaching fifth grade catechism that it used to be the conversation among the boys was around sports, around college sports, you know, the teams that they're on too. But, you know, that was kind of the shared interest. And more the shared interest are the games that they're playing. The games that they're playing, the platforms that they have. And it used to be, you know, there's been a change even more recently. It used to be the conversations were around their platform. Well, do you have
Xbox?
Do you have a PS65?
Yeah, whatever number they're on. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And now it's the specific games. So they're all playing the same games. And so they all have that in common. And it's taken over the role that it used to be. Well, yeah, did you see the Colts game yesterday? Where, you know, sports was sort of the common link between people that honestly mm-hmm. didn't have a lot else to to talk about at first. Now a particular game plays that role.
Do you think that their personal participation in sports is decreasing as the amount of time they spend online gaming increases? Is it a trade-off yet, or is it too early to see that?
I think you've got types of kids, and you know, I think there are some kids that are drawn towards the online world of gaming. There's other kids that are still drawn towards shooting hoops out in the backyard.
Okay.
And so, you know, depending on, you know, who the kid is, it's just broadened the ability, but it's still a common language. It's become a lingua franca, I think, for a lot of kids to be able to talk about the video games that they played. And we all had some sort of gaming platform when we were growing up. Primitive as it might have been, whether it was an Atari or a Nintendo 64.
I forgot about Nintendo 64. You're bringing back all kinds of good memories. Yeah.
But we didn't talk about them, you know? I mean, we might go over and play games, but it wasn't like a fixture of sort of our social interaction with our friends.
Yeah, I think I didn't notice that until my own kids were getting into video games, where they would go, you know, spend the night at a friend's house. I did notice, and takes out, they would bring their video games. And part of what made where you wanted to influence your friends would be that if we're all on the same platform, then we have access to each other's games. Because they used to come in those cartridges. And so you go buy the cartridges and then you bring your cartridge with and plug it in. But if I'm on Nintendo 64 and you're on PlayStation, our cartridges weren't compatible. So then you'd have to either bring the whole game system around.
Right. So there's a social element that the gaming brings. I think there's also a set of skills that have developed that... I think there's a positive side to some of the games of developing a certain skill set.
There's problems. I've read some research, problem solving, because some of the games have extensive kind of riddle puzzle features to them. I think some of the other skill sets can include a certain kind of collaboration with others. Like you said, to you have to work with other characters in the game to experience a higher level of mm-hmm. achievement or success. Hand-eye coordination for certain games obviously are involved.
Yep. I think one of the biggest ones, and this sounds ironic, but the value of failure. I think that these video games teach, you know, that success is built off of success of failure. You've got the big bad guy at the end of the level that you got to get past, and you're going to sit there and you're going to play that game all day long and figure it out
15 times,
and that involves your character dying
each and every time
right. to try to figure this out. So I think that resilience that comes through failure, I think kids are learning that failure's not always, you know, the end all, you know, the huge tragedy that I think that, you know, people your age or my age grew up, you know, with, you know, failure's failure. I mean, if you fail, that's the end.
Game over,
exactly.
But there's also kind of an element of the supernatural in some of these games. You know, you
absolutely
get to this level and all of a sudden you have some power and you had to sacrifice something else to get the power and kind of, you know, you get superhuman things that kind of, I don't know, kind of mess with your mind a little bit because they're not normal. They're not anything you really can achieve at all. You become godlike kind of.
Yeah, you can look at these video games from a couple of different levels. We've been looking at kind of from the ethical level of, you know, what kind of person does playing these games make you? And as you said, there's a trade-off. You know, on the one hand, you know, they bring you closer to other people. They work with cooperation. They help you develop a certain set of social skills. But on the other hand, I think there's some huge negatives ethically along that. Same thing with skills. You know, you're learning certain skills, but there's a trade-off. I think you're also depleting certain skills that you would be learning if you were out in the woods with your friends. You know, you mentioned imagination. I think these video games absolutely kill imagination to a certain extent. Well, so I think there's that side of it. Yeah,
you're right. I think with the imagination, there's sort of the creators of the game are, that's whose imagination you see at work and not as much your own. But there are definitely some, I would say, moral traps that are inherent with gaming.
But Jim, you were bringing up kind of the aesthetic side of these video games. That's a whole nother realm that we can look at of how gaming has really changed things and moved things along, because the aesthetics of video games are fascinating. There was an article in Public Discourse just about that, the aesthetics of video games recently. So we're coming up against a quick break, and when we come back, let's talk a little bit more about the aesthetics around video games.
As you know, the Catholic Radio Annual Dinner is coming right up on October 2nd. Part of the fun is the silent auction and the live auction. If you have an item or two that you can donate, please give us a call. We can still use a few larger items, maybe a week in your vacation home or condo, or some tickets to a sporting event, or hard-to-get tickets to some event. Look around, think about it, get creative, and then give us a call at 317-870-8400.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Timothy O'Donnell and Jim Ganley, and we are talking today about technology, but more specifically, we're talking about video games. So that's kind of where the conversation's gone, because I think when people look at the dark side of technology, they're looking at one of two things: the effects that social media has had on the world, or the effects that video games are having on the world. And so, you know, part of this discussion, I think, comes about because you and I are guys. I find that a sort of fascinating aspect to video games.
That we're
too.
Both guys? Oh, no, to video games.
The video games have a unique, the video games to a certain extent have a unique appeal to males.
They do.
You know, I think you were saying that the distribution has kind of grown a little bit more even, to where now it's only about 2/3 of gamers are male and 1/3 female, where it used to be even more lopsided than that.
And so it's very lopsided depending on which game, talking about. So
exactly.
Men are very attracted. Men and boys are very attracted to the military games like Call of Duty and first person shooter games. So where you're an individual character with deadly weapons that you're using. And then some of the other, I don't know if the word that comes to mind is, you know, there's a whole kind of sick genre whose flagship is Grand Theft Auto.
Right.
There's a whole bunch where you take on just truly malevolent characters acting out all sorts of vile and disgusting things.
Right. And, you know, we went into the break saying we're going to talk a little bit about the aesthetics. You know, the Catholic Cave, part of the idea of this show is to take a topic that's current, you know, today it's video games, and look at some of the philosophical kind of implications underlying it, some of the concepts, some of the principles, and you know, kind of try to think through these things as a Catholic ought to think through them.
Yeah.
And so when you're talking about aesthetics from a Catholic standpoint, one of the first principles with aesthetics is that those three transcendentals,
the true, the good
and the beautiful, are they're one and the same. So the true is the good is the beautiful is the true. And that disruption, that attempt to break those apart, mm-hmm. You see that very clearly when you get to the aesthetics of the video games, as you were saying. You have these beautiful depictions of evil. you know, yeah, and
which
and,
we might call glamour.
Right, exactly. Yeah, the glamour of evil. Yep, exactly. And so, you know, there and Jim, I think you kind of latched onto this of saying, you know, there's almost a diabolical side.
An
occult side to some of the darkness around it. And I think it's that aesthetic that comes from trying to strip away the beautiful from a notion of the true and the good.
I agree. There's a kind of Garden of Eden effect to it too, right? Because what's the you know, when you think about eating the apple in the fall, it's an attempt to be kind of godlike, right?
Right.
And so when you think about the allure of acquiring, you know, superhuman or transhuman qualities is attractive to us as human beings.
Right. And you know, the tragedy with this to me is when you start to think about video games and what the potential is there, you've got something that can easily combine the good, which, you know, the good is the realm of action. It's the realm of ethics. It's the realm of what we ought to be doing, how we ought to act.
Yeah.
So you've got the good combined with the aesthetic into one place. So you've got the beauty and the good mixed right there in a way that, you know, could have so much potential. Well, to be a wonderful thing, and yet, you know, it seems to have fallen so far from the mark when you look at it.
Yeah, there. A quick contrast might be, on one hand, the some of these first-person shooter video games are so realistic that the military makes use of them in training exercises. So to train, which when you have, you know, what is the military? It's a, you know, it's a professional force.
I mean, when you're talking about ethics, you know, you're talking about goals and objects, and what is my, you know, where is my action directed?
Right.
Well, for the military, my action is directed at eliminating the threat.
Correct.
You know, eliminating
correct.
The bad guys.
Exactly. Yeah, and it's within a certain context of the broader project of being a military professional, and so the video game in and of itself can be very helpful in training properly training troops. The same video game, though, in a different context, in private hands, has the potential of dehumanizing the human person on two levels. One is, it can, through the repetition of killing, it can make the object, meaning other human beings, dehumanize. And that line between, that bright line that should be between what's going on in a video game and reality begins to blur a little bit. And then the other dehumanizing factor is you're dehumanizing yourself because we're habit forming and we're training ourselves. And there's just as one quick example, I wrote a paper years ago on Columbine, and part of the research included the FBI's report on factors that led into it. And the video game was one of the, I think there were six factors. It's not to tell the whole story. Video games do not, like many other things, I think of it like a standard, you know, bell curve where 90% of people or more are not going to have a problem regardless of the video game that they're playing. But there's still a significant, leaving 10%, where there can be some already kind of psychological or spiritual or both predispositions for things to go horribly wrong. And in Columbine, these kids train themselves how to shoot. That's another reason why they're able to kill 30 plus of their fellow students so quickly, because they use the video game as a means by which to train up for their day, for their shooting spree.
Right. You know, we had mentioned earlier that I think one of the bad effects is the distortion. And, you know, I use the word killing. It's not exactly killing the imagination, but the effect of video games on the imagination, particularly the moral imagination, I think is one of the negative effects. And I think when you get into what, those first
persons... dwelling on it, though. That's well, your... Right? You're dwelling on... If I'm dwelling on killing other human beings in a variety of different ways and manners as part of the goal of success within the game, again, most people aren't going to have a problem. It's not going to affect them negatively, psychologically, or spiritually per se, because they can compartmentalize it. But there are some where that can be detrimental.
Right. You know, we were talking about the union between the good and the beautiful. And the juxtaposition, the thing that brings them together is really the imagination. And how and it does in several ways, but one of the ways is it allows somebody to put themselves in a variety of different situations safely. You know, morally safely, but physically safely as well, so that you learn and you can think through and you can imagine how I ought to act in this position. And one of the effects of the video games is you're kind of giving your imagination over to the maker of the video game. So, you know, no longer are you the one kind of creating the situations, but the situations are created for you and you're just along for the ride. So you're losing that ability, I think, to navigate morally by handing your imagination over. And to that extent, you're kind of weakening your ability to think through certain situations. But you're also training yourself. And you know, through the imagination, we develop a lot of habits. I think that's one of the, you had mentioned porn. I think that's one of the pernicious effects of porn is, once again, it kills the imagination.
It dehumanizes both the consumer and the object.
But we're very quickly and very easily, from the comfort of our own living room, able to practice horrendous habits. And
right.
And we...
Well, that's the danger of these devices, right? Is that the device itself, my smartphone, for example, I'm just seconds away from all kinds of truly evil stuff, right?
Yeah.
And so I have access to it in a way that we all do now, in a way that we never had before. And it what that does is I think it increases our vulnerability, because sometimes with temptation, time can be on your side. So in other words, if you're tempted to do something, one really effective thing to do is, for example, I like to pray the rosary, because the rosary will take me just one set of mysteries. So that'll take me 15, 20 minutes. Well, 15, 20 minutes is usually enough time psychologically for most of us for the strongest part of an urge to pass. It's not that the whole thing's gone away, but that the most intense part of the urge to of a temptation, say, to do something we shouldn't, will pass in about that 15. In fact, the person I got that from was Fulton Sheen would say that. And I found it to be very true in my own life. Well, when things are now the proximity of sin is only 2-3 seconds away, versus if the old days with pornography as an example, there was the one store that sold the stuff and it was on the other side, it was on the bad side of town, and you had to get over there and blah, 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 and the shame of being discovered, of being there. All the stigma and all that are all gone. And so, again, I just think it creates another kind of drawback or potential hazard, moral hazard of the technology is we're up, vices up close to us in a way it wasn't before.
Now, right. You were talking about video games, and sometimes in a video game, the programmer, whoever wrote the game, controls your choices. You think you're making choices, but you have your choice of shooting this person or that person, where maybe in real life your choice would be not to shoot any of them, to do something different.
Right.
But when you
play
the game, that's not a choice.
Exactly. And not only is it the difference between real life and playing a game, but it's the difference between a story. and playing a game. Where when you're listening to a story, sure, it's scripted, it's written, but you're able to put yourself in the place of that character in a reflective sort of way to think about all the different options that are available to that character. In a video game, you're inhabiting that character in a totally different way. And so by inhabiting that character, you really are at the mercy of the writer of that video game.
Yeah. The thing also I want us to bring us back to, Mark, is something you brought up before we take this next break here in a few minutes, which is that we want to kind of, I guess, embedded, I think, in our conversation with some of the adjectives that we've been using is this sort of Catholic worldview. That's incumbent upon Catholics for us to integrate our faith into all of our, into our whole selves, right? Into our whole being, because that's, you know, through that integration of, I like to use this to think of my thoughts, my words, my deeds are all aligned and aiming at the good, the true, and the beautiful. And that needs to apply to things like video games as well. The leisure and entertainment are not sort of Catholic free zones, right, Mark? I mean, in fact, because of these moral hazards that we've been pointing out, it's more important now, more than ever, that we're thinking through our choices and our actions from a strong Catholic identity and perspective.
Yeah, and that's a lot easier said than done. So let's take a quick break and let's talk a little bit more about how we as Catholics need to react to this kind of new world of video games and technology.
As you know, the Catholic Radio Annual Dinner is coming right up on October 2nd. Part of what makes the dinner fun and helps us to raise the much-needed funds are the silent auction and the live auction. If you have an item or two that you could donate, please give us a call. For the live auction, we can still use a few larger items, maybe something like a week in your vacation home or condo, or some tickets to a sporting event, or hard-to-get tickets to a special event. Think about it. I'll bet you have, or know of, something that could really get people excited. We need to know about it right away so we can promote the item on the air. It could be from you, your family, or even your company. It'll be helping Catholic Radio in a big way. So look around, think about it, get creative, and then call us at 317-870-8400. That's 317-870-8400. And if you don't have tickets to the dinner yet, just give us a call or go online to catholicradioindy.org.
And welcome back once again to the Catholic Cave. We are talking about video games today and trying to look at it a little bit from, a Catholic worldview, from a Catholic perspective. There's a lot of negative, I think, that we've talked about around video games. But one thing that keeps bothering me about this is what's lost, I think, within this world of video gaming by it not being exploited by good people. There's two aspects to anything bad. On the one hand, you have the bad and the evil that's done, but on the other hand, you have that absence of good, that vacuum that's left when the bad is pursued rather than the good. And I feel that acutely in the world of video games. There's so much potential, I think, within this realm to, in some ways, heal aesthetics, to bring aesthetics back towards the good and to meld the world of ethics, the world of action, the world of planning and thought and everything that goes into a game. I mean, that's what you're practicing a lot of times when you're playing a good game, is those practical skills that ethics are built upon. And combining that with unprecedented abilities to create beauty right now. These entire online universes that can be created, to be able to combine those from a Catholic perspective, that opportunity just seems to be being completely lost.
Yeah, that's, with online gaming, there is, again, a lot of potential, and potential obviously be for virtue or for vice. And there's something about, I guess in my estimation, there's something about fallen human nature, concupiscence, that we're often attracted to, we're attracted to some of more evil kind of things where there's blood and guts and things like that. I think too, Mark, we were talking a little bit about, as we were kind of preparing for today, one of the other phenomenons is that you do have from a male perspective, you do have this kind of predominance of men seem to be finding through various video games, especially action oriented video games an outlet for kind of inherent male aggression, and that's an outlet where in say in school systems and things like that, where it's less and less acceptable for, I'll say, boys to be boys, doesn't mean that our natural kind of aggressiveness won't find an outlet. And I think that there's increasing studies that are being shown that is where men are gravitating to, is one outlet for that is in video games as a way to express a natural male aggressiveness.
Right. Yeah. And it's not only the schools. I mean, I think our whole society on multiple levels have cut right, off the opportunity for, as you said, boys to be boys. You know, we started the show talking about, you know, when we grew up, you know, we would leave and you know, 8 a.m. And, you know, honestly, I remember mom at one point saying, don't come back until.
Yeah. Such and such. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know, no, it wasn't only just a.
You couldn't step foot in the house.
Right. Exactly. And now, and part of it, I think, is a positive. But I think there's negatives to it too. Now, you would be looked upon as a bad parent if you did that, you know, right. a very bad parent. And I think there have been lawsuits against parents for doing exactly that, sending their kids out to go play unsupervised. And yeah, I mean, you know, you and I both have horrible stories, I think, of the types of things that can go wrong when you send kids out for 12 hours at a time on their own, devices.
There was a news story just less than 2 weeks ago about a woman who sent her 8-year-old daughter out to walk the dog in the neighborhood, and one of the neighbors reported her to Child Services.
Exactly.
So that seems a little crazy.
Yeah,
to me.
Yeah, that seems a little crazy, but that's also how times have changed. Because
I suppose it depends a little on the neighborhood.
Yeah,
but you know, generally that sounds harmless.
Well, that was a from the news story and the footage you could see, a very nice suburban neighborhood.
Oh wow, yeah. Crazy then.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's just everyone's paranoia that. You know, the government's got to control. You got to have rules. You got to follow them.
Right. Yeah. So and so I think as a part of a backlash to that, kids have filled their time more with video games. They have figured out ways to get away while still being inside, you know.
What's the latest number? Do you know, Mark? I think I've got an estimate of how much time we're spending each day on our devices.
Oh, gosh. You know, experts will, you know, efficiency experts will say, you know, keep a diary of how you spend your time. And right. I have never done that just because I'm terrified of the amount of time that it would show that I
think
spend.
I think it's like 6 hours now
per
day that we're spending on our devices in general. And the younger you are, the more time
I'm
that
sure.
is. Because I don't know that I'm spending 6 hours, but I'm sure I'm spending several
hours.
And
like I said, part of that is to fill the void that's left by, you know, society kind of changing, particularly for boys, and saying, well, you can't do what you used to. You know, I remember spending a lot of times playing football out in the street in front of my house.
Oh, yeah.
Not only do I not see kids doing that anymore, but I really think most neighborhoods would be very irritated and angry at kids playing in the street.
yeah.
You know, they would stop it. They would redirect it. They'd do something to make sure the kids were not actually playing on the concrete. And I remember playing, you know, football in the street. We didn't just play two-hand touch. You know, sometimes we'd even be playing tackle football in the street.
That's pretty tough. We would play tackle football with no equipment, but we'd be in the park. but I can tell you, too, growing up, yeah, I mean, playing in the street and stuff, I mean, we would play, you know, we'd usually play some form of baseball in the street, you know, catch or something like that. When I remember growing up, so our family was a Sears family, because that's who my dad worked for his whole life. So if it didn't come from Sears, it wasn't for us. So that's how that worked. And I remember growing up, and so the blue jeans we got were from Sears, so they were called Tough Skins.
I remember Tough Skins.
Were made out of some kind of crazy. It must have been what the skin of the space shuttle must have been made out of the same material, because you could wipe out. I mean, I would wipe out on my bike, and I literally, you know, I'd scrape my knee so bad, blood's like running into my shoe, and the blue jeans. untouched, completely untouched. They look brand new. That was one of the drawbacks. They never broke in. They never faded like a good pair of like Levi's or Wranglers do today. But yeah, we did all kinds of stuff on our, and I think a bicycle, I would say, you know, if the choices were really between a bicycle and say an Xbox, the bicycle is probably a far better choice.
Right, and you know, there's a whole set of memes.
That opens a whole world.
Yeah.
Into the real world.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's a whole set of memes online, too, about, you know, why women typically live longer than men. And it features a whole series of usually 12 to 13-year-old boys on bicycles doing the craziest things that you could imagine. And, you know, so...
I can tell you who was a great inspiration to us growing up. To do things like make a bicycle.
Evil Knievel.
Exactly. Yeah. Evil Knievel. I love that guy growing up because he's all kinds of crazy.
I remember
stuff.
Evil Knievel was not allowed in our household. I remember.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was. He was the source of all sorts of dangerous
thoughts. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, we'd go make bicycle jumps and a lot of broken arms.
Well, probably even your dad to some degree because, you know, we used to go out on. Sunday rides in the country, and Dad would like to take those little hills as fast as you could, so it tickles your stomach and would drive Mother crazy. But you know,
and as we're laughing about all of these things, you know, most of these things don't happen today, and probably for a lot of good reasons, you know, that these are dangerous activities by and large. But boys need that kind of danger. You know, boys need to be able to do something dangerous.
We need adventure.
And so I think that's where a lot of the video games have come in is
to fill that void.
To fill that void. And that's why the first-person shooter games are so popular. I like to think. You know, I'd like to think that it's
the
not
the action
that,
ones, for sure.
It's not that these boys enjoy killing. It's that they enjoy the danger that's present. They enjoy the potential of being killed. That's presented in these games.
You still look at, I know that we're running out of time here today, but, you know, when I was looking at, you know, kind of like kind of gender distribution across different occupations, and overwhelmingly the most dangerous jobs in the world are still all, you know, 99% men.
Right.
So you think about who's working, you know, think about who's out on a offshore oil rig in the, you know, off the northeast coast of Great Britain near the Arctic Circle, it's 100% men.
Yeah.
You know?
And the funny thing too is if you sit down and you talk with men that do these dangerous professions, by and large they've got the same story of doing crazy dangerous things as
their whole
growing
life.
Up. Their whole life.
Yeah.
So you know, the way they played conditioned and habituated themselves for the occupation that they later took on. And, you know, that's another aspect of the video games that, you know, we'll have to wait and see. But, you know, what types of professions, what occupations, I guess, are we going to be seeing? And how are those occupations going to change having a couple of generations of kids that have grown up more on video games and less on outdoor types of play?
Well, and that's the title of that recent book, iGen, and that is, we've got now, so it was we just had the 10-year anniversary of the iPhone. So it's like 2008 or so, I think it came out. And so we quickly do have that next generation coming up where their entire lives have been in a world full of smart devices and devices that are getting even smarter.
Yeah, I remember telling my daughters a little bit about passing notes in school. And it's funny because that's almost a foreign concept to them.
Oh, yeah. Why would you do that when you've got a text?
When you can text. Exactly. Yeah. Yep. Well, unfortunately, we are coming up to the end of the show. But, there's a lot of uncovered territory, I think, that we haven't talked about in the world of gaming and games. The good that they do, the challenges that they present. So I think this is a topic we're going to have to revisit, Tim.
Oh, definitely. And hey, we should mention too, for next week's show, tune in, because we are going to have Dr. Kevin Vost back into the Catholic Cave. He's got another book out. Can't wait to discuss that with him. Called, you can pre-order it on Amazon, because that's one thing I've got that sitting in my shopping cart, although he was kind enough to share a preview of it with us. We'll be ready to talk a little bit. It's Thinking Like Aquinas.
Yeah, and you know, I have to think that if Aquinas were around with us, his favorite video game would be Civilization. That's my thought. So, so on that note, thank you very much for listening yet again to The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at catholicradioindy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to kent@catholicradioindy.org or by calling 317-870-8400.